Welcome in, everybody. Coming to you live from the capital city of the great state of Texas, overlooking downtown Austin and the University of Texas. Welcome to the weekly podcast that understands the pride and tradition of the Texas football program will never be entrusted to the Timid of the Week. It's a new episode, a new year for the Eyes on Texas multicast. The EOT is a product of the Republic of Football on Dave Campbell's Texas Football Podcast Network. I'm Aaron Hogan, morning show host at 102.7 ESPN here in Austin, as well as the On Texas Football YouTube channel. He is the senior writer at Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine, Mr. Mike Craven. Mike, how are you, my friend?
Doing pretty good. Staying busy, but doing good.
Yeah, you've got a book coming out that you've been working on since last fall. We'll tell you about that coming up. And been a busy stretch here. I've taken a new position here in Austin, and you're writing a book and got a magazine season about to begin. But we got a lot of football to talk. It's time to talk some Texas football. You know, after a month long for our own personal winter workouts, happy to report a few pounds lighter for me. The old body mass index down a couple of points as well. We're ready to crank this thing up. Since we've last spoken here on the EOT, plenty has happened in Longhorn land. Head coach Steve Sarkisian got a big fat new contract. Going to make $10 million plus per season. Lock him in at the 40 acres through 2030 now, coming off the run to the Big 12 championship and a trip to the Final Four. 11 Longhorns put on a show at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. Freak show performances by A.D. Mitchell and Byron Murphy. Great showings for Devondre Sweat, JT Sanders, Christian Jones as well. Of course, Xavier Worthy ran the 40-yard dash heard around the world. X-Man posted the fastest time ever in the dash at the Combine, a blazing time of 4.21. Plenty of buzz coming out of Indy for the Horns, including the possibility of three Texas players being drafted in the first round for just the second time in program history. UT Pro Day is set for next Tuesday. And, of course, Mike, the college football industry was aghast when backup quarterback Arch Manning decided not to opt into the new EA Sports college football video game. For our first corner here on our first cast in more than a month, thoughts on those pressing issues, Mr. Craven. Let's start with the new contract for Steve Sarkisian. Gets the new extension to his current deal. Thoughts on that as we launch this conversation to spring football?
Yeah, it needed to happen. The first contract Sarkisian got from Texas was school friendly, to be honest, in terms of just major college football and what coaches get these days. And that's because of kind of the past demons that Sark's worked through. And, you know, when he's proven now over years that those seem to be behind him, you win, you know, that many games, a Big 12 championship, go to the college football playoff. Obviously the Alabama opening got a few guys raises around the country when Nick Saban retired. So if you're Texas, you're happy where the program is. You're happy with Steve Sarkisian. It wasn't a crazy no buyout guaranteed contract like A&M gave to Jimbo Fisher. So there are outs there. In case it goes off the rails here for the Longhorns over the next couple of years. But, you know, everything's moving in the right direction. And in college football, that means the coach gets paid a little bit more.
Yeah, and I agree with you about the wasn't a Jimbo deal where it's a balloon payment no matter what. And Jimmy Sexton had a good run there, right, with Nick Saban stepping aside and retiring. Got Kalen DeBoer the job at Alabama while getting raises for Mike Nolan at Florida State, Steve Sarkisian at Texas, even though I don't think either were really – factors to leaving. But that's the big the big game in college football has been for a long time. I remember the great DeLoss Dodds telling me way back when Mac Brown was getting raises every year that, you know, if we were to lose Mac, you know, where would we start to hire the next coach? Like, where would that number be? We like to keep Mac right about there just because that's would be going right to replace him, so we don't want to lose him. So let's keep it rolling that direction. Also, your thoughts coming out of Combine, Mike. I mean, it was a you know, There were 18 Michigan State players there, or Michigan players there, I should say. A lot of Georgia players. But, man, when it really, as far as headlines go and social media buzz, Texas really took the combine, especially with Xavier Worthy and what went on there. What'd you make of X-Man and a 4-2-1? I thought A.D. Mitchell at 6'2 and over 200 pounds had a freak of a performance with a broad jump and a 40-yard dash time of 4.3.5. He was outstanding. Byron Murphy did as advertised. What'd you make of the Longhorns in Indy?
Yeah, I mean, you realize why certain programs are winning a lot of football games, right? And Texas has been underrepresented at the NFL Combine for the last decade or so, and that's because of the on-field results, right? I mean, Michigan, like you said, you know, has, you know, nearly two dozen players there. Texas with 11, I believe that it was, and so. I don't always care about the numbers, right? I mean, it's just working out, you know, being great at working out can help predict your success, but it doesn't define it. I'm more of a tape guy than a numbers guy. But what I do like about the combine is it gets everybody together and you start really hearing about what teams think of who and what the NFL is higher on and what they're not higher on. I think the projections get a little narrower and more focused. And it does seem like Byron Murphy is a lock to be like a top 15, maybe top 20 pick in the draft. And I kind of thought he would be, you know, the highest drafted player from Texas when we would talk about it in December and so, and it feels like that's bearing out. I didn't think Xavier Worthy was that fast. I mean, I knew he was like fast. I didn't know he was Marcus Goodwin, like just fastest of all time at the combine fast. I was super impressed with that. And as you said, A.D. Mitchell earned himself a lot of money with that workout.
Yeah. Well, I think, as you say, I'm more of a tape guy too. That's where A.D. Mitchell, I think, kind of blew it away, because he showed, you know, anytime you've seen him at Texas or at Georgia, he was a clutch player, big time performer, made the big catch, made the big play, routes run, high point in the ball. And so you're like, I really like this receiver. And then he goes out and shows kind of super freak athleticism with almost a 41 inch, you know, vertical leap and a broad jump and 4.3 and a half speed. You kind of go back and say, wow, this guy's an elite athlete. Might push him up into, you know, right behind the Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze kind of thing. Brian Thomas at LSU. He might be that fifth receiver now, and drafted between 20 and 32 potentially. And that's why I say, you know, the last time the Longhorns had three players drafted in the first round, Mike, it was 1980. Mm. I was 8 years old, and they could have, you know, potentially Byron Murphy. I think you're right. He might be, you know, when you look at this draft, he might be one of the first defensive players taken, because all accounts are the quarterbacks are going to go early, the tackles are going to go early, and the receivers are going to go early, because it's a great draft for all three. So QBs at the top, then I mentioned those receivers, and then there are three or four tackles, offensive tackles. There could, you know, Byron Murphy could be there in the middle of the first round as one of the first defensive players taken, because they see him as a three-down defensive lineman and maybe the best pass-rushing third-down lineman in the draft. He also, you know, he's in the first. And then if A.D. Mitchell and Xavier Worthy, if that speed, you know, just attracts somebody at the back end of the first round, I know a lot of people have linked it to the Kansas City Chiefs, replicated in the speed of Tyreek Hill to go with Travis Kelce and everything else they have there, that they have the last pick of the first round, obviously, having won the Super Bowl. So we'll see. Could the Longhorns get three? You know, if not, there's going to be a bunch of Longhorns going that second round. And JT Sanders, I think, and Jonathan Brooks, with that coming off that knee injury, still got rave reviews for his tape and his interviews while he was there. Those guys, and Tavondre Sweat, obviously, somewhere in that top 50 picks, I think, with his size. And, is he a two-down defensive lineman or a three-down? And one guy I thought had a real good combine, maybe quietly, was Christian Jones.
Yeah.
Christian Jones, he showed really good athleticism, not surprising. But again, you go back and watch his improvement. I think the thing the NFL likes about Christian Jones, he can play tackle, he can play guard. So he's got position versatility, which is big. So, you know, third, maybe fourth round for Christian Jones when it's all said and done.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, former soccer player, great feet, athletic for his size. I mean, one of the most mature and fun people to talk to that I remember on the beat over the last few years when you'd go visit Texas. Just a great interview. So you knew he'd knock that out of the park. I got a question for you. You're a little bit more of an NFL draft guy, just an NFL guy overall than I am. If you had to predict this now, who do you think has the better NFL career, Xavier Worthy or A.D. Mitchell?
I'd say Mitchell. I think, especially after I saw him, the athleticism, I think X-Man has a place without a doubt, but I think he's always going to be kind of a boutique player, right? I mean, where the speed, I don't think he's built to me. He's 165 pounds. So you can't do him too often on bubble screens or the end arounds, the jet sweeps. He might get himself killed out there. But his top end speed is that of a DeSean Jackson, a Hollywood Brown, those kind of players. And we've seen him electrify on the punt return and kick return and those kind of things. So I think he's got a spot as a wide receiver two and a kind of a boutique player. I think A.D. Mitchell showed he could be a wide receiver one potentially, Mike, in the league, where he becomes the number one target. Size, catch radius, long arms, they love about him. He only dropped one ball last year. And again, clutch. Think of the touchdowns the playoff games. Think of that game against TCU on the fourth down that Quinn Ewers just threw up. He had to go get the ball and make a play. That's, you trust that about. He's got a big game ability to him. So I would say A.D. Mitchell, big picture, just bigger, more sturdier athlete, and showed really high level athleticism. I think he's going to be a real good pro.
Yeah, more athletic than I thought he was. You know, when I saw those numbers, I guess my first thought, he's not as great after the catch as Xavier Worthy, right? Like, Xavier Worthy is so good after the catch. I think that could be an advantage for him. But yeah, I think I would lean A.D. Mitchell as well, just because of size. And not only because Xavier Worthy, you know, maybe oft injured because of how small he is. But the jump balls down the field when you're playing against bigger secondary guys, like, I don't know how much he can play on the outside and get vertical. It may be more of a singular slot and then returner guy. Mitchell can play more spots. He can play more spots at wide receiver. I think that's an advantage.
Well, I do think the games in the NFL is moving towards Xavier Worthy. We saw the Houston Texans take Tank Dell in the third round last year before he got hurt. Man, he was uncoverable. I mean, they just found ways, and he would use his quickness and his speed. And, you know, the one thing about Xavier Worthy in 4-2-1, that's going to resonate in everybody's head. Your safeties have to be on their heels when he's on the football field because he can run by. You don't have safeties that run 4-2. So, you know, he can run by your corners. You got to, you know, that's why with you look at the Chiefs, you know, Patrick Mahomes can deliver that ball down the field. You still got Travis Kelce to deal with and Rashee Rice and these other guys. That's just being on the field is weaponry for him, I believe. And you're right, the run after the catch stuff, the special teams. I think they both have a chance to be real good players. And I know Sark has kind of banged the table for X-Man since he got here. Just
his work ethic.
Yeah, how mature he is. And, you know, he took a lot of heat with the broken hand as a sophomore and the drops and maybe lack of focus. But, man, had a great junior year. Really like both of those guys into the National Football League. And obviously, when Texas dominates the combine like that, or at least takes all the headlines, it's great for the program. It's great for Sark, right? In a short amount of time, Sark's able to say, we had two guys there 2 years ago. Now we've got 11. We're developing players. Seeing, you know, again, another boost for the program of, you know, come here, live in Austin, make some NIL dollars, and get developed to play at the next level while competing for championships now in the SEC. Not a lot to negatively recruit against this program right now.
Yeah, and winning matters a lot, obviously. I don't want to, before what I'm about to say, I needed to say that out loud. But I think that part, the getting guys drafted, going to the combine, getting paid in the NFL level, that may matter more to recruits than the wins, right? I mean, like, if you're getting to the national championship, win all the time, like Alabama, maybe so. But what has everybody talked about in terms of Nick Saban at Alabama, that he was getting those recruits because you could come get developed for the NFL, that maybe you weren't getting as much NIL money, but if you come play for Nick Saban, you're going to go to the NFL, you're going to get the NFL money, you're going to play a long time in the NFL. That is a big selling point to these guys. Every one of these recruits that teams like Texas are going for want to play in the NFL. That is their goal. They are coming to college to become NFL players, not business majors, right? I mean, that's a nice side quest, but they are trying to go get paid in the NFL. If you can prove year in and year out that you're putting 10, 11, 12 guys into the combine and into the draft, well, then it's a reload process. They just come and backfill that thing, kind of how Mac Brown had it going back in the day. So the depth gets better. The yearly consistency gets better. It all kind of rises up. I think that's where Texas is right on that fulcrum, right? If they go 8-4 next year and take a step back, well, then we're having different conversations. But if they can continue it on into the SEC, then it just becomes harder and harder to stop as you start getting it rolling.
Yeah, we'll talk about that here on the Eyes on Texas multicast here coming up, the Texas spring preview and where we're going. I think Sark has talked about, man, the depth that they already have with the portal players already here, all the early enrollees, the returning players. For the first time since he's been here, they can really have a competitive training camp. You know, where they're getting a lot of one versus, you know, working on two different fields and get a lot of reps over the 20 practices, maximizing the workouts for the 4 weeks of spring. So we'll talk about that. One other thing, what did you think of the Arch Manning opting out of the EA Sports video game? I mean, that thing, anything Arch Manning does creates buzz and waves and headlines. And it's amazing. He didn't even announce it. It's not even like he came out and said, I'm not opting in. It was a report from Anwar Richardson over at Orange Bloods. He didn't ever comment on it, didn't say a word, but it became a national topic of usual. Whatever happens with Arch becomes a big story.
Yeah, I don't think it's that big of a deal, right? It's just a video game. If Arch doesn't want to be attached to it, then that's fine for Arch Manning. I do always find it odd when people, businesses, whatever you want to take as the example, do PR stunts that make the PR work, right? Like, anything they're worried about being in the game isn't as big of a deal as like the backlash for not being in the game. So I guess that's the part that I don't get, right? Is like, if you're trying to go under the radar, not make any noises, just be the normal college football player that hasn't won a job yet, well, then you're in the game, because that's what all the other college players are doing, or getting into the game. It's not for the $600. It's to be a part of a game that they haven't played in 10 or 11 years that they all heard about growing up. They want to be a part of it. I guess if you're trying to be Mr. Normal Guy who hasn't earned a spot, well, then just go be part of the pack and go play the game and don't make any waves by not playing in it, by not being in it. it almost feels like you're making yourself stand out from the crowd. And then it becomes kind of the Chris Sims arch man, you know, just kind of spoiled legacy kid type conversation on Twitter.
Well, and that's why I said, you know, if he had announced that, like if he had come out and say, I'm not, then I would tend to say, agree with what you're saying. You know, as a report, and we don't even know that it's true. I mean, I just felt, you know, it goes back to Archie Manning saying he's not going to take any NIL deals or money until he's a starter, which, you know, kind of falls in line with this. But you're right. I mean, it wouldn't have made a headline. But again, had he put out a statement or made an announcement that he's not, then I could see he's trying to curry some extra attention for it. But either way, look, there's a good chance when Quinn Ewers moves on after this year that, you know, he's a starter and he might be on the cover of it in 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. And then they'll cut his own deal there. That's kind of how that projects for Arch Manning. And let's be honest, his last name is bigger than the video game as is, you know, the first family of football and where it stands. So Arch not in. Arch will be the backup quarterback. And so that's a little recap of what's going on since we go ahead, Mike.
Do you think it's just he doesn't want to be in it because he's not the starter and he has to earn it? Like, do you think it would be that or the conspiracy theory here, right, is that he's holding off for when he is the starter, he can demand what you're saying, and that is to be on the cover, right? To like withhold him from the game, build up the anticipation he's the starter next year, and then they go to EA and go, hey, if you want him in the game as the starter of the University of Texas, he's going to be on the cover.
Yeah. I expect him to be in the game next year for sure as a starter. And look, I mean, even this year, the $600 in the video game for the masses was the across the board. And then guys like Quinn Ewers and Shador Sanders and, you know, the kid at Georgia, you know, Carson Beck. I mean, they got a little extra, right? Their people negotiated a higher number because they're going to be the star players. Arch will do the same thing, I would imagine. I don't know. I just trust. There's something about this Manning thing. I just don't read too much into it. I think it is what it is. I think he's a kid that wants to play college football, enjoy college. You know, NFL is always going to be there. He knows the brand he is. He's been in a fishbowl his whole life. It's just how he handled his recruitment. It's kind of how he's handled himself since he got to Texas. I just expect him to continue. He doesn't act like he wants to be the show. And I know people want to create that he does want to be the show. And this is, I don't know. I just think it's
I would just want to be in the game. Just want to be in the game. And so it feels weird that you wouldn't want to be in the game. And I think everybody wants an explanation of to why you wouldn't be in the thing that we all want to play.
And I'm not a big video game guy. So I don't, that's kind of weird for me where I don't really play video games. So I never really have. So, you know, to me, that's probably why it's less of a big deal than most who do play the video game. All right, let's talk some actual spring practice in our first quarter, Mike, as we talk Texas football, preview the spring. We're 1 week as we record here on a Tuesday for the Longhorns having their pro day and opening spring workouts. Let's start with some conversations about the offensive side of the ball and with the idea of what is the strongest units on paper to the most concerning units when you look at depth and starters returning. I did see where ESPN ranked the top quarterback rooms in college football, speaking of Arch Manning, top five, Ohio State 1, Texas 2, Oregon 3, Georgia and USC. So is it fair to say coming into spring, you feel best about the quarterback position, or is there another position you'd like better, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, offensive line's up there for me as well. But since it's just a singular guy, give me quarterback, right? I mean, you may have the best quarterback in the SEC as soon as you walk into the conference. You know, if not the top, then the number two in terms of accomplishments. You know, Quinn took a huge step forward next year. And if he takes a similar step forward before his next season as he took, you know, in between his first and his second, he is going to be a top five quarterback in the sport. Maybe a top five NFL draft pick, a Heisman Trophy finalist, all of those things, right? And we all know how important the quarterback position is to the team. And then you add the backup being Arch Manning in his second year in Steve Sarkisian's system, which is a system that quarterbacks thrive in. So give me quarterback if we're talking about the position group we're most confident.
Yeah, and I've talked about it a lot on the radio, and I think we'll talk about it into the spring. I think Quinn Ewers – I think on the coaching realm, Ryan Day has more pressure than any coach in America right now this year, right? With Michigan coming off the Natty, all the changes in Ann Arbor, you know, Ryan Day and obviously the NIL, they opened up their pocketbooks at Ohio State and added a ton of good players and bring in Chip Kelly to run the offense. I mean, it's all in, right? Your rival wins the championship and there's a frenzy in Columbus. So Ryan Day's got it's win big or bust, and you certainly have to beat Michigan this year. With all the changes. But is it fair to say Quinn has more spotlight and or pressure on him than any player just because of who we just talked about behind him and the expectation of the step forward. And for the first time in a while, I mean, we've talked about the we're back conversation for Texas. You know, they're going to be preseason top three, Mike. I mean, they're going to be right there. So the expectations will never have been higher, or not in a long, long time. Quinn Ewers, to your step forward conversation, he really needs to have that. And then that's some pressure. I feel like he's ready to handle it, but he's going to have a big spotlight.
Yeah, a lot of faces of college football left on the field and on the sideline. Jim Harbaugh, Nick Saban, Caleb Williams, I guess even Drake May to an extent, right? Marvin Harrison, like the guys we think of when we think of college football are gone. I think Shedeur Sanders probably has the biggest microscope on him just because of the Deion thing in Colorado and the fascination we have, whether you're on the side of hoping that they achieve or hoping that they fail, right? Like Colorado and Deion Sanders have become a sport unto itself almost. I think Quinn is next there because of what you talked about. I mean, being the quarterback at Texas is always a big deal, especially when they're really good, but especially when they're going into their first year in the SEC. You're playing Georgia at home, playing Texas A&M for the first time in over a decade there. You're going to Michigan. Like, Texas is going to be in a lot of big national spotlight games, a lot of big narrative games, and that's on top of always being in those because you're the University of Texas. And I just mentioned three big games. I didn't even say the Oklahoma game, right? Like, yeah. Which is always really, really big. And then you're going to Arkansas for the first time in a little while since you got your brakes beat in the last time you were there, which is always a big deal for the Arkansas. What is a person from Arkansas? An Arkansian?
Okay. Arkansas.
Like, that's a big deal for that state, right? That's the Super Bowl for that state. So Texas is going to be in the biggest games in the country for most of the year. Quinn Ewers is going to be the most visible one in there. And everybody's got an opinion of Quinn, right or wrong, fair or not. Everybody's got their opinion of Quinn. He's going to be looked at. And then, you know, obviously Arch right behind him. So, huge spotlight on Quinn Ewers this year.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's 1 or 1A with Shedeur Sanders, but I don't think Shedeur Sanders and Colorado have the expectations that Texas is going to have. No. And you're right, those spotlight games. I mean, Texas is expected to win big, take another big step. And, yes, it'll start with that Michigan game week two. And, you know, Texas is going to be favored in that game with all the changes in Ann Arbor that we know about to go in there and get a win. So, it's just – Not to project negatively, but if they go in there, he struggles against what is assured to be another good defense. You know, you'll hear the Arch Manning claims, right? You'll hear people clamoring about it. That's just the way that goes. The backup quarterback's always popular, especially when it's Manning. So, yes, we'll see. And you've covered Quinn since he's in high school, South Lake Carroll. Do you have any, as you've watched him grow, do you expect him to be able to handle that, put him on his shoulders and, Sark, of course, is going to be there right there with him, developing him. They've got a lot of talent around him. The play calling, I think, should help him. But is there any doubt that you feel like he can handle what's about to come?
I used to have that doubt. I mean, I think Quinn would admit that he was a little bit immature when he was younger. I mean, he skipped his senior year, obviously, and I think that set him back. He didn't get to kind of be the man at South Lake Carroll and really go for a state championship after that loss to Westlake in the title game as a junior. He hadn't been healthy. You know, he wasn't healthy as a junior in high school. Then he goes and sits at Ohio State, and then he comes to play. He just hadn't played a lot of football until last year. And I think last year, when he cut his hair, I know that's as silly as that is, I think it was a sign of like, hey, man, I got to grow up, and this is mattering now. You know, like, I'm no longer Mr. Surefire five-star quarterback that's guaranteed to be the number one overall draft pick. There's a lot of questions about me. Like, I may lose my job. Like, there seemed to be more urgency in him last year. I think it grew him as a leader and as a player. And so I have fewer of those questions now about Quinn Ewers as I did in the past. And then also, he doesn't have to be Superman, right? Like, Texas is good enough to where he doesn't have to be 4,500 yards and 50 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. Like, they're not going to ask him to do that. So I trust in what they're going to ask Quinn Ewers to do, that he can do those things.
Yeah. And then the word you just put on there, leader, and you mentioned the skipping high school. I've talked a lot on the show in the morning about, you know, when he didn't play that senior year, he missed that opportunity to lead his team, right? To be the senior captain of the football team. You know, you only get a couple of chances as you mature to do that. And, you know, whatever he was as a junior, he wasn't a senior captain, right? He was a junior. So there was a senior class that was leading the way. Coaches always lean on their seniors. He didn't get that. And so I think to your point of leadership, he's still – and Sark's going to have to work with him to really – because this team was led 2 years ago by Bijan Robinson. It was led last year by Sweat and Murphy and, you know, some of these veterans. And really the receivers, you know, elevated Quinn in a lot of ways. I think this is big. And can Quinn step into those shoes and become the tip of the spear for Texas? I think it's one of the bigger questions of the offseason for the Longhorns.
Yeah, I think that's fair because he hasn't had to do that. Like Jordan Whittington was that on offense last year, right? You know, Christian Jones, even Jake Majors is back and will help with that leadership thing. But I mean, this is Quinn's team. Like this is obviously Quinn's team for the first time. And that comes with pressure and with expectations. What gives me hope for Quinn, honestly, is that Big 12 championship game last year. Right, that was a huge game. And he walked into that thing and he crushed it. And to me, that was a sign that, oh, man, you know, he's grown up. He's grown up a little bit. He played really well in that game. He took control of it. They put it on his shoulders and he went and won a Big 12 championship. And so I think he can do it. I don't think they're going to make him do it all by himself, but we're going to have to find out. I think you're right. I think that is probably the determining factor of how great Texas's season is. The difference between kind of itching, scratching into the playoff and like being definitely in it. And one of the favorites is if Quinn Ewers takes yet another step forward.
It's the Eyes on Texas multicast, the product of the Republic of Football and Dave Campbell's Texas Football Podcast Network, spring training and spring football preview for the Longhorns. I wrote down some names here. Mike, I'm excited to see here in the Texas spring camp and then into the spring game. Let's run through some, and then you can add your comments and or players you're excited to see. First for me is Cam Williams at right tackle. Do we feel like we know Brandon Baker's coming in from Modern Day? There'll be competition at that spot. But, you know, as good as the offensive line is, where do you see competition? I look at Cam Williams and his development as a guy that can really take that next step, replacing Christian Jones. Who else on the offensive line are you looking at to see, you know, stepping forward here over the next month?
Yeah, maybe Trevor Goodsby, Jaden Chapman, those kind of guys. Like what Cole Hudson comes back as fully healthy and competing with DJ Campbell and Hayden Connor at those guard spots. Like Texas is good in good shape offensive line, as good as a shape as you can be as a college program on the offensive line. I think Cam Williams may not be an instant upgrade over Christian Jones, but his upside is bigger, right? Like if he has a really good offseason, a really good summer, you know, maybe trims down 5 or 10 pounds and really takes that right tackle spot. He's a bigger, stronger, more athletic, higher end prospect than Christian was. And so the Texas offensive line could be really good. Depth is probably the bigger question. Like, can they develop a second center? What does it look like behind Kelvin Banks and Cam Williams at tackle? Is it Baker coming in as a freshman and being the obvious third tackle? And so to me, the offensive line, we talked about what position we felt the best about. Offensive line's right there with quarterback. I think Texas's offensive line is like really, really good. Like Joe Moore award winning good offensive line this year. It's going to be the leaders of the football team. And from what I know about football, what I know coaches tell me about football, when your offensive line is the leaders of your football team, you win a lot of football games. It's why I'm bullish on Texas really competing for the SEC in year one.
Yeah, well, think Georgia, think Alabama, think Michigan last year. You know,
Washington even.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The Joe Moore Award winners a year ago. Michigan is going to have a quarterback in J.J. McCarthy drafted in the first round, maybe the first 20 picks, who didn't have to do much last year. They almost put training wheels on him and said, hey, let our defense and our offensive line win this game over and over again, and it worked for Jim Harbaugh. Hey, backfield, if we have an offensive line and a quarterback that you like, as you look at the offensive running back room, C.J. Baxter, the UT put out the spring roster, and he's up to 220, 225 pounds. We know Jaden Blue is one of the fastest, more dynamic running backs in the country. Two freshmen are coming in. Offensive backfield, Tashard Choice has done a great job of stockpiling. That should be a strength as well.
Yeah, I guess I'm at the point where, like, in Tashard Choice, you trust, right? Like, I mean, if you can lose Bijan Robinson and Rashawn Johnson and then, like, be as good at running as you were last year with Jonathan Brooks, and then Jaden Blue comes on at the end and C.J. Baxter is showing some flashes, like, Texas is going to be able to run with the football. I remember going into last year, Sark kind of getting those questions of how do you get the run game going without Bijan Robinson and Rashawn Johnson, and him talking about how, as a offensive play caller, I have had a 1,000-yard rusher every single year of my career. I would imagine we do it again. And he was right. Like, he nailed it. Like, it ended up not being a big Achilles heel for Texas. I think the same is going to be true. That's a perfect complement to each other. One's a big bruising guy that can punish defenses. One can go 80 yards in the drop of a hat. So I think Texas is going to be fine at running back, especially if one or two of those freshmen come in and really develop early.
Agreed with that. And I saw with that roster I mentioned that was put out last week, Savion Redd, they say up to 240 pounds. And Savion Redd came in as a receiver, moved into running back, came the Red Cat last year. I mean, he's putting time in the weight room. He could become your short yardage back, kind of Bam Bam Sam kind of thing if he's that dang big with his tenacity. Really like that piece for your offense. Obviously, the questions come at the outside skill spots because of the transfers. You feel good about them, but, you know, Quinn has to build chemistry with the, you know, the returning guys. I've heard really good reports on DeAndre Moore, who's coming back. Of course, going to wear number zero, apparently, this year, DeAndre Moore. Jonte Cook will switch to number one. He's going to take the X-Man number and adopt that number. Trey Wingo comes in as a five-star kid. He's wearing number five on the new roster that's come out. But the receivers, the transfers are Matthew Golden, Isaiah Bond coming in from Alabama, looking to improve his draft stock, trying to take that A.D. Mitchell track where you come in and put on a show and end up in the NFL draft the following year. And then there's Silas Bolden from Oregon State. You also have to throw Amari Nyblack. That roster did have him up at 240 pounds or 235, I think it was. He's the speed tight end looking to replace JT Sanders. Where are your questions on the outside, Mike?
I don't really have many, to be honest with you. I honestly think that I like this receiver core more than last year's, to be honest with you, because I think if Silas Bolden is your third, or Matthew Golden is your third, right, or Jonte, like, that's better than Jordan Whittington. And we all love Jordan Whittington, like what he brings and the intangibles and the toughness and the blocking, and that play against TCU obviously will go down as like one of the all-time kind of hustle plays at Texas. But he's not as explosive as a Matthew Golden or a Silas Bolden, right? And like Jonte Cook, those backups to your top three last year were true freshmen that hadn't played a lot. Like, now your backups are going to be a Silas Bolden or a Jonte Cook or a Ryan Wingo. Like, it's deeper now than it was last year. I think Texas has legit five or six really solid options at wide receiver. Maybe none of them are as good as Xavier Worthy. Maybe the second one isn't as good as Adonai Mitchell. But I think the third receiver is better. The fourth receiver is better. The fifth receiver is better. I think the tight end is pretty comparable. So I don't think skill position, offense in general, I don't think I have much of a worry for Texas this year. I think they're going to be one of the top three or four offenses in the country.
Well, and it's going to be shades, I think, of the Sark offense when he's calling plays for Nick Saban in Alabama, where he just had all the speed, right? I mean, where the third receiver was as good as the first receiver, potentially, maybe the fourth receiver, where you just pick your poison, and there's so much speed on the field to go with the great big offensive line. I mean, Mac Jones, who we just saw traded and he flamed out in the NFL, he was the third runner up for the Heisman that year, mm-hmm. because there were so many weapons. And so you got a higher ceiling quarterback with these weapons and a backfield like we just talked about. You know, last year, you're right. I mean, you have the speed in X-Man. You had the kind of the big go-to possession receiver in A.D. Mitchell. You had the running back at receiver in Jordan Whittington, and you had, you know, JT Sanders, who was a matchup problem. This year, it seems like they just have speed. They just have dudes that you can't run as fast as they can, which mm-hmm. is going to put defenses on their heels, which should make the running game open up. Play action. I mean, I think Sark's probably staying up nights. And by the way, happy birthday to Sark just a couple of days ago, turned 50. He's staying up nights thinking about how he can, X and O and get these guys in space and create mismatches and nightmares for the defense. Let's flip to the third quarter and talk defense. And that's probably where the questions arise more than the offense. Let's start with the positives. What do you feel really good about on the defensive side of the ball as the Longhorns head into spring practice? I will start and just say just the consistency at the coaching staff, right? Coaching mm-hmm. staff consistently, same exact coaches across the board, except for Kenny Baker on the defensive line. He comes in to replace Bo Davis. Rave reviews so far for him. Sark has, made really good coaching hires when he's had to, it feels like. You just mentioned Tashard Choice, Chris Jackson last year, receiver, Kenny Baker in. So I like the consistency and continuity with scheme and the coaches that are there. What are you most confident in defensively, Mike?
Yeah, I think the thing I like the most about this defense is the added team speed. Like, they are going to be a more athletic defense. Like, Jalen Ford was an excellent linebacker. Those young linebackers coming up are more athletic, right? Like, I think the safeties at Texas had kind of ran their welcome, right? Jaron Thompson and those guys, like, they just weren't – Keaton Crawford, they just weren't fast enough. You look at it now in the projected secondary of Texas, Terrence Brooks, Malik Muhammad, Jahdae Barron, Andrew Makuba, Derek Williams – those guys can fly and they can play a lot of positions, right? That is a more athletic secondary that matches up with the SEC speed. I think the linebackers are faster. So I just think it's a more athletic, speedy defense that will maybe not be as experienced, but they're going to get around the football and make more plays, I believe.
Yeah, I think, Pete Kwiatkowski is, it's taken him a few years. And, Sark came in with the, you know, the tag of an offensive mastermind, right? And so recruiting was easier for him on the offensive side, you know, yeah. bringing in receivers and quarterbacks. They wanted to come play for him. I think PK coming from out of the state and having to build that, you know, you can trust me to develop and trust us to develop you. He had to earn those stripes, but now you're seeing the recruiting pick up on that side of the ball. And I think we're going to get to see on defense, Mike, the kind of defense that he wants to play. Stickier coverage in the back end with more position versatility back there. Last year, they had guys who could, you know, only play safety, or they had to play the boundary corner, or they had to play the nickel. It feels like they're going to go back to the Dwayne Aquina days where they've got guys that can move around. And the Makuba Jade, there's already talk as Jade's playing some corner right now with Makuba on the field and Derek Williams' emergence and some of the younger guys. Michael Taft is still there. I think they're going to be stickier in coverage, which they need to be because they weren't great last year in coverage. I think they'll be stickier in the back end, more athletic in the back end. I think they'll be better on the edges, Mike. I mean, I think when you bring in a Trey Moore from UTSA, a Colin Simmons, who's up to 235, 240 pounds right now, coming out of Duncanville, Ethan Burke, Colton Vosick, you know, returns of Baron Sorrell. I mean, I think they're going to be – they're really good on the edges. Obviously, the question when you lose to Vondre Sweat and Byron Murphy to the NFL is how are you in the middle, especially when you've got the likes of Michigan and Georgia and Kentucky, these teams on your schedule. Texas A&M wants to be a rough-and-tumble football team. How do you replace those two big dudes up front and then right up the middle of your defense?
Yeah, I think Sadir Mitchell, Aaron Bryant kind of dictate the upside of this Texas defense, because I think that they're going to be better on the edge, like you said, especially if Trey Moore handles that jump up. That's the one concern, right, is how do you handle going from G5, American Athletic Conference, Conference USA, in the past for UTSA to playing SEC football. Like that is a major jump. He wasn't as effective against Texas, for example, at UTSA, but he's going up against Kelvin Banks. How many people are all that effective, right? So he'll need to figure out how to play against those kind of caliber players, and practicing against them will help with that as well. So I do think the edges are better. As we mentioned, I think the secondary is better. We could argue about the linebacker position on if that's going to be better or not. I think that depends on if you bet on upside or experience. But yeah, the defensive tackle spot is kind of the big question mark for Texas. And that hasn't been true for a couple of years. Keandre Coburn, Moro Ajomo before them. You know, obviously you have Alfred Collins back, Verdon Broughton. You know, you think those guys are going to lead the way. But if those young guys can step up, if an Aaron Bryant, if a Sadir Mitchell, hopefully both of them, obviously, step up and can give you 15, 20, 25 snaps a game, all of a sudden you're back at a 4 or 5-man rotation up front, and that's what you're looking for in the SEC.
Well, and as they put the training wheels on Colin Simmons a little bit, I feel like you can project them to take the training wheels off Anthony Hill, right? And Anthony Hill can become that weapon that just harasses quarterbacks. Where do you put them? Where are you going to find them? Because if you feel better about your coverages, you feel good about your edges, the linebackers are more athletic, running side to side, you almost can use Anthony Hill as just a weapon. You know, like we've seen the Cowboys use Micah Parsons at times, Harold Perkins at LSU in year one. I mean, can you go ahead and let Anthony Hill just use that freak athleticism and size and strength just to become a disruptor? We saw even last year as a freshman when they allowed it, it really, you know, paid dividends for the defense. But, you know, sometimes the coverages were blown. We saw against, Washington and Oklahoma last year with really experienced quarterbacks. The pressure couldn't get home because of the coverage. This should be a better unit. I think Anthony Hill can be a special player on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I think my biggest question about we talked about the interior defensive line. That may be my biggest question. But, like, I think the thing I'm most intrigued about, especially in the spring, because I don't know if we'll know if those defensive tackles are, like, ready to hold up against Georgia, you know, on April 20th in the spring game. But I do think we're going to figure out if any of those young linebackers are ready to step up and if they're going to take David Benda's job, right? If this is going to be Anthony Hill, David Benda, their linebacker, or is a LaFau, a Burrell, a Ty Anthony Smith, like who is going to step up next to Anthony Hill, Gillette, any of those guys, right? Like who are those young linebackers who we've all heard about behind the scenes that the other players have said are coming that are really good, that are more athletic than what they've had at the second level at Texas? Who joins Anthony Hill as the leading linebacker, or do they need another season and David Benda, you know, holds on to his job and keeps it going at linebacker for Texas?
All right, UT Pro Day 1 week from today as we record this, then practice begin March 20th. Interesting that Sark, let the players take spring break, and then they're going to go full 4 weeks. So last year and the year before, it was, you know, do a week, get your feet wet, take a break, and come back and do the next three to the spring game. Not this year. They're going straight through. Sark says this will be their most competitive spring that they've had because of the depth on the field and all the newcomers rolling in. I mentioned the number changes, Mike, if you're going to be out covering camp and out if our audience is going to go out there, our viewership is going to be watching some practices potentially, or certainly at the spring game, the number changes you need to know. DeAndre Moore, I mentioned, going from 11 to 0. Jonte Cook's number one now. Jalen Gilboa, a guy, by the way, reportedly having a really good offseason. Really like what he's doing, having his best work. He's a guy to watch for. We're talking about that stickier coverage and that, maybe that star position. He's wearing number three now. Jahdae Barron's wearing number seven, wearing that old Michael Huff number. Billy Walton's number 30 now. Sadir Mitchell, you've mentioned a couple times. He's wearing number 90 now, giving up 99. He's taking over for Byron Murphy. As far as the portal additions for Texas, jersey numbers, Matthew Golden from Houston's going to wear number two. Isaiah Bond's going to wear number seven. Amari Nyblak, number seven. The tight end is going to be number eight. Andrew Makuba coming in, the local product from LBJ, number 13. Kendrick Blackshear, the linebacker from Alabama, wears 14. Trey Moore, 31. And Tia Sevilla, the defensive tackle transfer from Arizona, who we didn't talk about, talking about the defensive line. He's going to wear number 98, and he's another guy, Mike, to watch for that. He can be in that rotation. Johnny Nansen coming in with the as the former now defensive coordinator at Arizona, knows Sevilla very well. He can be one of those, you know, powerhouses on the interior, because I think I agree with you. I think a lot of people do, that the interior guts and the way they can play physicality and have a rotation like they have will determine maybe the ceiling of this defense.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, it's the two defensive tackles and middle linebacker, right? Sweat, Murphy, Jalen Ford. And, like, who becomes that triangle? You know, like, who becomes kind of the toughness, the backbone, the spine of the Texas defense? I feel good about the frontline defensive tackles. Like, I think Alfred Collins is going to be fine. Like, I think maybe it won't be as good, right? Like, maybe it won't be two NFL draft picks up there. But I think Texas is going to be fine at the front of that. It's how do you replace Alfred Collins's depth, right? Like, how do you replace Vernon Broughton's depth? Like, if those become kind of the frontline guys, what do those back end dudes become? Like the transfer from Arizona and some of those young defensive tackles.
Yeah, you're right. You're projecting the starters, but who's next? And that's Sark. I wonder if they don't, and we won't know this till the season starts, but if they're going to rotate the secondary less than they did last year because they trust the guys, there's more position flex, and maybe they, but you know, Sark's not going to stop rotating defensive linemen on the edges and on the interior because he's a believer in not just the freshness in the fourth quarter, but the freshness of a team over the course of a long season. And obviously, with the addition of a 12-team playoff, your season this year could be longer than ever before. And how about this, Mike? When you know, the 12-team playoff is coming online, we've talked about the idea that and the prospect that Texas literally could play Georgia three times this year, if you're paying attention. They're playing in the regular season here. October 21st, they could meet again in the SEC championship game. And obviously, however that plays out, they could play again at some point in a playoff, which more and more like the NFL, where you could end up playing a divisional team in the playoffs. And I know you shake your head. I think a lot of people do. But that's a distinct possibility this year for the Longhorns. Or they could play a Michigan twice or somebody else twice, the way this plays out. Big picture. All right, that's our spring preview. We certainly will have another one next week when we record another Eyes on Texas multicast and bring you the latest as spring practice fires up. We'll have more actual, I'm sure we'll have some Sark sound next week, or at least some Sark quotes to talk spring practice. They crank this thing up next week. But Mike, some Texas basketball real quick to wrap up our fourth quarter because the Longhorns basketball March Madness is here. And it's been a really strong year on the women's side, without a doubt. But it's also, I think, emerging as possibly a strong side for the Texas men. Let me ask you about your thoughts on – let me just say a quick shout-out to Vic Schaefer, because his team lost Rory Harmon, the all-star point guard, both ends of the floor. She got hurt in practice, tore her knee up way back in December. And they've you know, built this thing around another a freshman named Madison Booker. They've gotten to 27 wins now. They have a chance – if they can win the Big 12 tournament here tonight, they could be a top four national seed, big picture, up there with the South Carolinas and the big names of the world. He's done a heck of a job. And Vic Schaefer, one of the better coaches in women's college basketball, no doubt. Texas men, meanwhile, finished with three wins in their last four games. They've secured a spot in the big dance. Their performance in this week's Big 12 tournament will probably determine their seed, whether it's an 8 seed, maybe if they make a run a little bit, win a couple games, could get up to a 7 seed. Some would say a 6. That might be a little high. But Dylan Dessou earns first-team All-Big 12 honors. Congratulations to the former Hendrickson Hawk. He's also named the league's most improved player. But what's your feel on this Texas basketball team as we head into the biggest weeks of the season?
I don't have much of a feel You know, like I think that they're turning the corner and playing really good basketball. Then they went into a slump, and then it was like the sky is falling. What is this Texas team even going to make the tournament? Then they turned the corner and closed really strong. This is last year. This is about the time of year last year where they really turned the corner. Dylan Dessou became awesome, right? Kind of running through the Big 12 tournament. So my problem, I guess, you know, what I worry about with college football is what I'm about. Basketball is that first few months, like the results don't matter as much. You're trying to get into the dance, play your best basketball at this time of year. If they can, you know, put together a solid week in Kansas City, get a strong turn, you know, strong seed, get the right bounce or get the right matchup early in the tournament, you know, this team could get into the Sweet 16 and kind of overachieve to everybody's expectations.
Yeah. I mean, I give Rodney Terry credit. I know he takes a lot of heat. He inherited a bad situation last year and did the best with it, and that's what earned him the job. And, you know, when he took the job, because their top two recruits went on to the G League, they didn't have roster and, you know, adding pieces. And I was at the game on this past Saturday against Oklahoma. I'll Tyrese Hunter, because I think the most consistent player on the team, without a doubt, is Dylan Dessou. Remember, he didn't get inserted into the starting lineup until January. So, you know, it's been a feeling out process with him and how the roles and how they play with him. But as we hit March, he's their most consistent player. Dynamic first team all Big 12 player, can score at three levels. Max Asemus, you know, is what he is. If he's hot, he can score 35. If he's not, he's still going to draw a lot of defensive attention. That's an important thing. And that's why Tyrese Hunter is so darn important, because if he plays like he did against OU this past Saturday, he scored 30 points. He was very engaged on defense. If they get those three going with what you know you're going to get from Kendall Weaver, the Mr. Energy guy, you kind of know what you're going to get from Brock Cunningham, right? I mean, he might cross block somebody, but he's going to play hard and give you some big shots where you need it, play with that energy. I think D'Souza in the post, but I think Caden Shedrick has come on as the year has gone on and become giving you more valuable minutes down low. I just think those three, if you have D'Souza, Asemus, and Hunter, and if Hunter's engaged and playing anywhere close to what we saw, against Oklahoma, they're a scary team because they've got a lot of pieces that can make a run in March, Mike. They make free throws. They got guards that can have the ball in their hands and get you buckets late. They got a guy, a three-level scorer like D'Souza, who can line up and score 25 in a night if you need it to. And, but again, as you said, they're a roller coaster. They could also lose in the first round. That's just kind of how this team is.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think it's as likely they lose to Oklahoma State as they could beat Iowa State, right? Like, I think Houston's the only team that they probably can't beat. But I think they can lose to almost anybody in the tournament as well, right? And so, and some of that's just college basketball and the parity and the transfer portal, and it's harder and harder to be great. I mean, you see Kansas even struggling, right? They're going to have a couple guys out. So, you know, I think Houston is the clear and above best team in the Big 12, obviously. But on any given day, we've seen this already this season, Texas is good enough to compete with any of the best teams in the country. Probably bad enough to compete with all the bad ones that are going to be in the tournament as well. And so, for a neutral like me, that's what makes Texas basketball so exciting.
Yeah, and I'll give, at least for – it's a very small sample size, but at least last year, Coach Terry had this team playing its best right now, and they kind of feel like their last four games. Even the Baylor loss was one that, man, they played really well for big stretches of that game, and then Dylan Dessou buckled his knee a little bit and had to go out of the game, and they end up losing that game in Waco. But it feels like they're kind of figuring some things out and playing with a lot of confidence. Plus, they got veteran players like, you know, Max Asemus took Oral Roberts to the Sweet 16 when he was there. Dylan Dessou last year was as good a player as there was in the tournament. Tyrese Hunter has been in this tournament now three times. So I think you got guys who have been in this spot and understand what the one and done kind of thing is. So looking forward to seeing it with the Big 12 tournament and the Texas Longhorns. Props to Coach Schaefer. Props to Coach Terry here as we get cranking up. But it's going to be fun, Mike. Spring practice, you'll be writing. Let me get an update on the book that you're writing, of course, and the magazine. I know a lot going on there as well. And spring practice firing up all over the state of Texas for you guys at Dave Campbell's Texas Football.
Yeah, so most of the book is written. For those that don't know, I'm writing a coffee book, kind of mostly a history book about each college football program in the state of Texas. So it'll be 13 chapters. Each school gets their own chapter at the FBS level. So mostly done with that. It's just like at the design part, you know, they design the book, we'll edit it, add some stuff, take some stuff out, that kind of thing. That should be out in August. But yeah, the next big thing for me is the magazine. Start to go on that tour. And that last week of March, start to go around and visit each of the programs and start writing up all those previews, start doing the cover. We've decided on what it's going to be. Not allowed to talk about what it is, but also write the main feature story for the magazine. And so kind of the unofficial start of the 2024 season for me, obviously.
Yeah, and spring practice next week. Something tells me there could be a cover that features Texas and Texas A&M. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
It could just be. It's definitely one of the options.
Look at my crystal ball. All right, man, it's fun. It's good to be talking to you again. We'll pick this up every week now and post it up at the podcast page there at Dave Campbell's Texas Football. Get it cranking on Spotify and iTunes as well. Make sure you tell a friend, share it, download it. We'll be covering Texas football all the way through the spring and beyond here on the Eyes on Texas multicast and rooting on the Texas Longhorns in basketball through the madness and, of course, baseball as well, but really keeping our eyes on Texas football as we hit an all-important spring practice, and it's going to be fun. We look forward to doing it. Remember, we are the multicast that keeps you on top of all things Texas football, and we'll be dropping every week. On